Hey, y'all, welcome back to Erase the State. Maddie K here, flying co-hostless again this week, but I do want to try and get back to the intended roots of this show and focus on a little bit of self-reliance, independence, agorism, all of the above. So I do want to welcome to the show a very special guest and a fellow Childerberger who I was able to meet last year and will hopefully meet again this weekend, Michael of Barbary. Michael, how are you, brother?
I am doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on, Maddie.
So are you coming down to Childerberg again this year? You are, right?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
I leave, it's Monday as we're recording this. I leave Thursday, kind of late morning. Drive
awesome.
My happy ass about 24 hours down to Texas.
Holy shit. So what time do you think you're going to get in then? Sometime Friday?
Yeah, probably like early Friday evening, late afternoon type of deal.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I had to rearrange some of my plans based on some other shit we had scheduled here at the house. So I'm getting in Friday.
Nice.
I know Jake Lindsay reserved two spots, 29 and 30 at the campgrounds. So I think I'm going to be there. I know Rawl is going to be there. I guess you'll be there now. And
yeah.
I think Carr is, 50-50, may or may not be there, but so it'll be a good time at least. We can, catch up and get ready for the rest of the jacklegs to show up.
Yeah. Oh, and I know Rollo said he was going to be kind of late, but.
He'll be in Friday night, I think.
Yeah. I think he's not even leaving Pennsylvania until like 4 o'clock in the afternoon or something like that.
Yeah.
Leaves.
Well, we might be good and toasty then by the time he.
I would imagine so. Because I, if nothing else, I got a whole case of homemade wine I'm bringing down.
Oh, outstanding. That's awesome. I look forward to that. So, I guess we'll jump right into it about the homemade wine. So tell us a little bit about what you do and the things that you like to do and some of the gardening that you have going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So I professionally and for the last 20 years or so in the real world have been a chef of one form or another. So food has always kind of been a big thing for me.
Sure.
Professionally and just personally. I mean, I didn't get my svelte form by not eating.
Exactly.
But, so as I've grown older and my interests have evolved into a greater level of self-sufficiency, I've taken that to the next stages of how to kind of separate yourself out of some of the mechanisms that the state has control over while still maintaining healthy diets and all that kind of thing. So, as you alluded to a moment ago, I have started in recent years doing a lot more gardening of my own. Been learning quite a bit about foraging wild plants. And then have been picking up hunting a little bit more as well.
Okay.
And then, as I mentioned a minute ago, I've kind of recaptured one of my old hobbies when I was younger of starting to make my own alcohols again.
What are some of the things you grow? And I guess how much planning goes into what you do? I mean, are you trying to get as close to like a farm or backyard to table as possible in your own house? And then are you doing anything sort of on the professional end, I guess, where are you growing stuff at home or are you at least working with more sustainably focused farmers and that sort of thing to aid in your day-to-day business, if you will?
So the short answer to all of that is kind of yes. The garden that I've got here at home. So, I mean, I live in town. We've got a regular size, like, city lot, or at least regular size for up here. It's like an eighth, no. Yeah, maybe like it's an eighth of an acre is the size of it or something like that. I mean, it's not particularly big, and a lot of it's used up by the house.
Sure.
But a front and a backyard of pretty decent size, like half of the backyard is garden plot currently, and I'm slowly but surely turning a substantial portion of the front yard into this as well. So eventually there's not going to be much of a lawn so much as it is just going to be garden everywhere.
Gotcha. So, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask, what are some of the things that you're growing? And I mean, you're in North Dakota, so I got to think that some of that is not going to be a perennial type deal, and you're going to have to replant. Maybe I'm wrong. I've never lived where it's like cold. I've only lived in Texas. So, so yeah, tell me, you know, sort of what you have going on there. And then what sort of planning has to go into that based on, I guess, your climate zone and, you know, what's
right.
more suited for where you live.
Yeah. And I'm going to touch on the climate thing first, because that is actually, it's a huge part, no matter where you live. I mean, mm-hmm. North Texas to South Texas, even the climates are pretty considerably different. And so you would want to grow different things, West Texas versus East Texas.
Sure.
You know, all that kind of thing. So that's just even still within the state, a big state, but one state nonetheless. So the climate is a hugely, hugely important thing to keep in mind with what you're planting. I don't know if you remember this, but some months back, another buddy of ours, Jared the Mongoose himself, mm-hmm. was complaining about his cauliflower that he was growing there in Arizona and how it had turned to flowers before he could even have a chance to harvest it. And that's a precise reason why he was trying to grow a pretty cold weather crop mm-hmm. in Arizona.
Sure.
Where even in the middle of winter, it's not exactly cold.
Right.
So that's definitely a huge part of what you have to keep in mind. And on that same vein, like, so we've only really had what most people would consider nice weather for, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks up here. You know, it's been nice sure. weather to me, but I live in North Dakota and I'm used to the winters that hit double digit negatives and stay right. there for weeks at a time. So 30 degrees is pretty nice compared to negative 40.
Gotcha.
But so, I mean, we've only had properly nice weather for the last couple of weeks. But it still has been getting cold. It's been getting close to freezing at night, that kind of thing. It's going to kill off a lot of plants. But that's where you start kind of looking at what things can handle and what kind of climates they thrive best in. So I've got currently radishes, carrots, broccoli rabe, Swiss chard, and cauliflower growing outside completely unprotected, and they're doing great because they actually kind of like that colder weather.
Sure.
They like it when it's not quite so sunny, it's not quite so hot. They grow pretty well. I mean, they still grow kind of slowly, but they're meant to. You know, and so that's a huge part of where the climate plays in, is like knowing what to plant and when. You know, if I planted my radishes in the middle of August, they'd probably grow real quick and then they'd go to seed almost immediately, which means the greens are going to be real bitter and tough. So mm-hmm. they're not really going to be edible because it's so hot. It's not really going to be putting much into the root. So you're not going to get the root part of the radish that we usually eat in the first place.
Right.
You know, things like that. So that's a much better time up here to be growing tomatoes and cucumbers and peppers and things like that, because it does actually get pretty hot up here in the middle of summer. So
sure.
things like that do quite well, actually.
So are you nearing the stage where you're ready to harvest that colder weather crop and then switch over to the more summer?
Not quite. Our weather has been weird the last couple of years. Like there's been a lot of wild fluctuations, hot to cold. So they're growing a little slower than they might normally. And plus too, a lot of the spots that I'm currently growing in, like, they've been neglected for years. Mm-hmm. So the soil isn't quite the best yet.
Sure.
And I'm trying to not spend a ton of money while building the soil back up. So it's mostly involving compost that I'm making here at home versus buying a whole bunch of fertilizers and stuff. If I was to have bought some fertilizers, I'm sure they'd be about ready by now.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not quite yet. It'd probably still be another couple of weeks, but they should be getting pretty close about the time I get back from Texas in a week and a half-ish.
Okay. And so, you know, are you trying to completely fill in all the vegetable needs in your diet with what you grow at home, or do you also do supplementation just from the store or from other folks in the neighborhood or farmers markets and stuff like that?
At this point, we definitely are still doing buying some stuff from the stores. I mean, okay. Again, because like I said, I'm trying to not kill myself financially while doing this.
Right.
So the process of building up is slow going, first off. And then secondly, it's just there's only so much you can grow in the space that we've got. So it's I don't think that I'll ever get to a point here where I'll be completely free of having to buy from a store or trading with somebody else, buying from the farmer's market, etc. But we can get to a point where that should be pretty minimal and mostly during the winter months.
And so these are all open air beds, basically, right? You don't have anything set up in a greenhouse or something like that?
Not yet, no.
Okay.
I mean, is that in the plan? What's that?
Is that in the plan?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. The hope is to get a more permanent structure greenhouse built in the back, you know, wood walls, insulation, the whole nine yards, electricity to heat it so we can actually grow in there all year, even in the deepest, darkest parts of winter.
Sure. You're still professionally a cook, you said, right?
Yes.
So how much of this is something that translates over to what you do in your day job? Like, I mean, are you out there like actively trying to source sustainably organically grown vegetables and things like that for a restaurant, or are you using more traditional sourced methods?
For the most part, I'm doing traditionally sourced methods. So I don't actually even work for a restaurant at this point. I'm a personal chef. I work for myself and my small handful of clients in their homes doing things for them. So generally speaking, I actually buy from the grocery store, and then so it'll depend a little bit on mostly on the client. You know, how much money do they want to spend? Do they have any kind of special requirements, etc.?
Sure.
So far, this being where I live, people are not generally that kind of hipster about things like that. They're just like, yeah, whatever's in the grocery store is fine.
Yeah.
I don't need anything super fancy.
Yeah. Don't even wash it. Just put food on the plate, please.
Yep, pretty much. Well, I mean, especially some of them, because, you know, like one of my clients is a farmer, and they have a like agricultural chemical company.
Mm-hmm.
So they are super duper busy.
Yeah.
They're just
yeah.
like, yes, we just need food because we don't have time to plan and cook and all that kind of stuff. And especially coming up here pretty quick, it's going to be getting into the real busy time with all the plantings and everything that's going to be going on.
What are some of the crops that are grown up there? I don't think I've spent any time in North Dakota, actually, which is surprising. I've been everywhere else for oil and gas, but not there. So what's, you kind of drive around the countryside and going to well site, and things all kind of look the same, except some of the crops change depending on where you are. So what's normally grown up there?
Durum wheat, barley to a degree, canola, soybeans, tons of soybeans, actually. Sunflower. Those are the big ones, at least out in the western area where I'm at. Eastern part of the state, they do a lot of sugar beets and potatoes, actually.
Okay.
Gotcha. That's out in the Red River Valley, Grand Forks, Fargo-ish type of areas.
And what about sort of more like, you know, I don't want to say like boutique type farms, but are there any small scale operations that are trying to do it on a larger scale than you are, sort of, you know, more sustainable, more health conscious, that sort of thing?
Yeah. That's not necessarily their goal.
Mm-hmm.
Like their goals are just sort of I don't know what their goals are because I haven't spoken to very many of them, to be frank, but just from what I have observed, it doesn't seem to be their goals, but you know, it's the normal type of things. People with incredibly large gardens or very, very small farms that are growing things because they're fun and they take it to the farmer's market to sell and offset their costs, that kind of thing. Yeah, there are some. I mean, especially though with this being a big grain producing state, mm-hmm. most of the farms are larger. You know, that kind of thing. And then also there is a fairly considerable beef industry in the state too.
Okay.
Beef and dairy industry, I should say. So, I mean, there's pretty big chunks of territory taken up by those too.
Sure, sure. And I'm guessing you don't have a Holstein in your backyard or anything, right?
God, no.
Not yet.
Now, the town I live in won't even let us have chickens, the fucking bastards.
Oh, see, that was my next question. And I've been, you know, I'm in an HOA, which, like, I don't know how other states are, but at least in Texas, like, I mean, if you live anywhere, you're probably in an HOA. And, you know, the city where we live in, which we're not technically in the city limits, they do allow chickens. You have to get a license to have them, and you have to have an acre size lot or larger, that's fine. We don't live in the city limits. That I don't really give a shit. The county doesn't really care, but our HOA and the covenant, you know, we have to sign and agree that we're not going to have any non-pet, you know, livestock or anything in the backyard. So, I've been trying to find a way to get like some stealth chickens going on, like build low coops and that kind of thing. But I haven't got the rest of the family sold on it yet, because we go through a shit ton of eggs, especially now since we're all home. I mean, we probably buy eggs by like, you know, about like 3 or 4 dozen at a time, and just kind of wait till they're technically bad by the date on the box, and then just boil them and, you know, make egg salad or whatever, and just keep it around. So I'd love to just have fresh eggs, but, you know, maybe soon.
Just as a one quick note, by the way, eggs last a shitload longer than those dates say they do.
Oh yeah, I'm aware.
I mean, a ton longer, especially under refrigeration, man. Those things can literally last months.
Right. And like I said, even we've had some that are kind of, you know, which it's all probably marketing bullshit, right? But we'll try and buy like the free range, you know, cage free, organic bullshit, whatever. And there's a notable difference between the...
I said there is a pretty noticeable difference in the free range.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, like the eggs themselves taste better than just like the super mass-produced, like thin white-shelled egg that you'd get at whatever supermarket, right? The shell's thicker, the taste is better, the yolks tend to hold together more, the whites aren't as runny. But beyond that, I don't know if they last any longer or not, but we've had some that are... I don't know if it's just the time, you know, with people burning through product like that. If maybe we've got, it feels like we've gotten close on some eggs. like I said, normally we catch it early enough and everything gets cooked and it's back in the fridge and prepared into something else. So, but at any rate, I would like to get some chickens here at some point, but we've kind of fucked ourselves by moving into a neighborhood and not out in the country with some land.
Yeah, I hear you. That's definitely the big goal for me too, is getting properly out into the country, because then I can do whatever the hell I want and fuck them.
Exactly. And then, you know, even we're starting to kind of get back into gardening a little bit. We do have some stuff, and I can't take credit for it. My sister-in-law has been with us for a while now, and she has planted, you know, bell peppers and tomatoes and okra and shit, what else? Banana peppers. We've always had jalapenos in the backyard. But you know, it's warm down here now, so we're starting to get some good shit growing. So we're in the 90s.
Especially those.
Yeah, we're in the 80s, 90s fairly consistently. The okra is like in a shaded spot. I think the bell peppers are as well, behind some lemongrass that hides some utility boxes in the backyard. So they're at least not, you know, getting beat on by the sun. And they're growing, they're growing crazy. So it's almost to the point where they're coming off too big to be usable, but we're excited about the early harvest, and we've got lost my train of thought here. We have a fig tree in the backyard as well. My wife likes figs, and our previous house had a giant fig tree in the backyard, which was always a good producer. So I think this will be our first year where we can actually get like one jar canned and put away of preserves. So
nice.
We're crossing our fingers. It's still pretty young.
That's super awesome. And that's one of the things too, not figs specifically, but that's one of the things I'm looking at doing this year up here, is I'm going to get a couple of producing trees put in.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at finding a couple like dwarf apples, apple trees to put up on the boulevard at the house. And then assuming I can find one, this is the tricky part with this damn thing, but finding a black walnut tree.
Mm-hmm.
To put into the yard itself to help A, provide some shade, and then B, in a few years, give us walnuts.
Yeah, yeah, that would be outstanding.
Of course, I gotta find one of the little bastards first.
I'm sure they, I mean, I've looked at trees not recently. It's been a while, but I'm sure there's a site somewhere. I mean, the internet's a very
Oh,
powerful
there's
tool,
tons
but
of them. There's tons of them.
yeah.
My big problem is a lot of the nurseries that you can find online for trees, they tend to send trees in what's called bare root form. So it's basically just a little bit of the trunk, no branches or very minimal branches off of them. Yeah, it's maybe a year old, maybe two at most, typically. And so it's just a root bundle, a trunk, and maybe a couple of leaves. And I have not had good luck planting bare roots so far. Every time I have tried, they don't establish enough to survive the winter. You know, because like I mentioned earlier, it gets fucking cold up here. Like, it's not just cold. It can and frequently does get to like instantaneous hypothermia and frostbite if you've got exposed skin type of deal. You know, so while the snow and everything helps insulate the roots, you know, it only helps so much when it gets as cold as it gets up here.
Yeah, and then you've only
So,
you've got a tree which is already in shock, and you're hoping it grew enough in the warm time to offset some of that, and
yeah.
that seems pretty dicey to try and grow a
Yeah,
tree
so I
that
have
way.
had no luck with bare roots. I'm hoping to actually find some honest to God saplings. So when I put them in, they actually are growing and can establish themselves throughout the rest of the spring, summer, and fall. So by the time winter comes around, they've actually got some strength to them to survive the winter and come back the next year.
So how did you get into all of this in the first place? Did you grow up, with kind of a green thumb? Were your parents that way? Or was this something that you just kind of fell into through the culinary arts, if you will?
It mostly the latter. So we tried having a garden several times when I was younger because it was something that my dad was used to when he was growing up. My grandfather definitely had a green thumb. He grew up on an apple orchard in Ohio. That was what his, you know, my great grandfather did. Like, he was a farmer for years, an orchard or an apple farmer specifically for years and years. So he grew up on that. He learned it from his father. So he kind of just took that along and then turned it into a gardening thing since he wasn't actually a farmer. And so my dad grew up with that some. So he tried a bit when I was younger. But like I've like to said to people before, dad doesn't have a black thumb. You know, he doesn't just kill anything he plants. But he doesn't have the green thumb my grandfather does, or did, rather. So, you know, we didn't have a lot of that growing up. So mostly I kind of got into it from the culinary arts. You know, it's a pretty easy transition to make, given that, you know, any chef pretty much anywhere or any cook worth a damn will be able to say, yeah, the fresher the ingredient is, the better it's going to be. And it doesn't get much fresher than picking it from the garden 20 minutes before you use it. So I had a little bit of an interest from that, and then the additional agorist and anarchist interest of extra self-sufficiency just kind of helped push it into overdrive in more recent years.
Since you mentioned that, it seems like every good anarcho-libertarian has a podcast, and recently every good anarcho-libertarian also has a planter box in the backyard with peppers in it or something like that. So,
Pretty much.
for the budding horticulturist, horticulturalist, what would you recommend as a resource, like be it a website or a book, or what are some plants that are easy for folks to grow that may be pretty universal as far as their climate suitability? That may be a tougher question than I intended it to be.
Yeah, well, it unfortunately, there isn't necessarily anything that's universal as far as the plants. Now, as far as resources, there's all kinds of things. So I've talked about this online a little bit. I recently went through and finished up the Master Gardener program offered through the North Dakota State University Extension Center.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most states in the U.S. have some kind of extension service. It's an agricultural extension service. A land grant university is another name for them, where they do things like the Master Gardener program, assuming they don't actually do that. Most of those resources are available, well, maybe not most, but a substantial number of those resources are available online through the various universities, typically for free.
Okay.
Now, it's going to be pretty basic stuff, you know, when to plant, what to plant a little bit, things to expect, some basic pest management, be they weed or insect, you know, some things like that. But, and then in addition, through the Master Gardener program itself, they do a lot of community outreach things and workshops and stuff like that that are free or minimal cost to the individual. So those are great resources. Honestly, as much as of a cesspool as the website itself is, Reddit, the gardening subreddits specifically, mm-hmm. have a ton of very knowledgeable people that just love talking about plants. So the like gardening, all those kinds of things on Reddit, great resources to look at. And look in your local vicinity for garden clubs and the like. You know, most of the people that are into these things, if the trick isn't getting them to talk about it, it's getting them to shut up.
Yes, I've certainly noticed that.
So if you can find somebody and just be like, hey, I'm looking to start gardening, where would you recommend I start? They will probably interrupt you halfway through that question and start telling you things.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. I had a friend in college. Actually, I knew her in high school as well. She went to a different high school, but that's neither here nor there. Her dad was actually a master gardener, and not, you know, not food. It was all just like roses and shit, basically. So. Whenever we'd go over, my parents were big gardeners, like, you know, flowering plants, and they had like a relatively small plot, you know, in the area behind their house at one point where they just grew like mustard seeds and zucchini and squash and shit like that. And they at one point they did have a giant, like
crazy.
Yeah. And at one point they did have a giant greenhouse, but it was like when I was one, and they tore it down and did some other shit. So I was like, oh yeah, you know, that sounds awesome. I kind of like it. But, you know, I grew up with my parents doing shit like that and planting things. And she was like, oh God, just don't fucking ask him about roses, please. Whatever you do, he'll go on and on and on. We'll not be able to, you know, whatever we were trying to do, like watch a movie or hang out or whatever. So I can confirm that once you get somebody that rolling, it's like a fucking runaway train.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's face it. The gardeners that are big into it, that are going to be involved in these clubs and stuff like that, like they're a Star Wars nerd, except it's about plants.
Yes.
Like they're just a different flavor of nerd.
Yes.
And any nerd, once you get them start talking about the thing that they like, who buddy?
Yep. Game over.
Exactly.
Yes. Buckle up, because you're in for a wild ride.
I do want to go back though, just because of something that you said a second ago that does remind me. You know, you asked a minute ago what kind of plants to look at growing just sort of universally. Mm-hmm. And the ones you actually just mentioned a second ago are great examples. Zucchini, mustard, most squash, those kinds of things. They're damn near universal. And zucchini especially, like talk to any vegetable gardener about zucchini sometime. Most of the time, the reaction is probably going to be, ugh, fucking zucchini.
See, I love zucchini, and I plan to put some in the backyard. Just haven't done so yet. But I mean, I think it's a pretty universal, you know, mildly flavored vegetable that you can make taste like pretty much whatever you want, and can be prepared.
It's not sorry for interrupting.
No, you're fine.
I was gonna say it's not that they dislike zucchini to eat it. It's once you start growing it, you start realizing how much they produce.
Yes.
So I'll give you a quick little story about that just specifically. So in my compost last year, it wasn't completely broken down. Mm-hmm. I know this because I had a zucchini plant that I did not plant grow last year in my garden.
That's awesome.
But we apparently threw some zucchini into the compost. There were still some seeds. It germinated. By the time I realized that it wasn't something that I thought it was initially because of where it was at, and I was just like, oh, this looks like a zucchini plant. Screw it. Whatever. I'll just let it go. Right? One plant. That was all I had all last year. Okay? I ate zucchini for 3 weeks straight off of one plant.
But see, that's awesome. That's what we want to do because we go through zucchini about like the eggs. Like we eat squash and zucchini multiple times a week just because it's an easy meal. It's cheap. Most of us like it. So, it plays well here in the K household.
Yeah. Well, but when I say I ate it like for 3 weeks straight, I meant every day.
Yeah.
That's how much one single plant ended up producing.
That's outstanding.
So that's sort of why I say like it is a universal thing that it's pretty easy to grow as long as you plant it in the right spot. You know, and that's something that you have to kind of learn a little bit over time about the plants and your specific microclimate in the first place, because the growing conditions in my yard are different from the growing conditions in my neighbor's yard, even though it's 50 feet away.
Sure.
They're mostly the same, but there's enough differences that the things that I'm growing may not work well over there, vice versa. Okay, so as you learn about your microclimate and just learn more about growing things in general, because there's a whole shitload to learn, you know, you'll learn what grows well and where. But zucchini, most squash in general, those are pretty easy to grow. They typically produce pretty well. And, you know, so that is a very good one. And then anything that's a member of the mustard family is a real good one to grow, because that wild mustards are oftentimes considered invasive weeds because they spread so prolifically and so easily.
Yeah, I didn't know that there were wild mustard greens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think I really enjoy it. I mean, I'm from the South, right? So I like mustard greens and collard greens and that sort of thing. But I think we have passed our planting season for for that sort of thing here in my part of Texas, at least, because it's just so damn hot now.
You've missed the first part of your planting season.
Yeah.
Because and that's one of the other things that is real important to kind of keep in mind if you're looking to garden, not so much for just the fun of it, but as a way to kind of replace some of what you're buying from the grocery store. Spring planting is not the only plant.
Right.
You know, and depending on where you're at, you may have three or four plantings a year. Now, Texas is a prime example of that.
Sure.
You basically, depending on what you're growing specifically, because obviously some things have longer maturation dates than other times rather than others. But depending on what it is you're growing, like you very easily could be planting every 3 months down in Texas.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because it's not like the winters there are especially cold, at least in the southern half of the state. Northern half, it might be a little bit difficult for winter growing, but southern half, absolutely not. Yeah, you know, you're growing things all year if you want to.
Sure, sure. Okay, well, so have we missed anything else? I know you wanted to back up there briefly, but anything else you want to get out there before we get out of here?
No.
All right. Well, any plugs?
Yeah, I got a couple real quick. Mostly my website, thestatelesscook.com, all one word, thestatelesscook. There we go.
Boom.
Criminy. Such a long URL. But that is where I do my writing. I've got a little bit of a blog that I don't update super frequently, but I do periodically, talking about some of the same things that we were talking about here tonight. I post recipes there periodically. And here, coming up soon-ish, I'm going to be starting a video series that I'm calling the Prepper's Pantry. It was something that some people were expressing interest in with the recent insanity
Mm-hmm.
You know, taking your shelf-stable prepper goods and making decent quality meals out of them. So I'm going to start a video series on that here sometime in the next few weeks, and I'll have more information about that on my website and links to the various channels once I've got them up and running there. And then, you know, come hang out with me on Twitter. It's at Barbary, B-A-R-B-A-R-Y, of, O-F, all one word.
Nice. Well, Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. I'm excited to see you again here in a few days. It's been a year. I can hardly believe that it's been a year since the last time, but, you know, I kind of time warped at Schulerberg One anyway, so.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. I'm not going to have a repeat performance. So anyway, y'all know what to do. Like, share, subscribe. Tell your mom. Tell your dad. Tell your dog. Tell your gardener. We'll see y'all next week. Peace. Across the 57 Chevy with the hillbilly band. Had a little honky-tonk filled with one-night stands. Take a telly on fire with a gonzo steel. And a doghouse space just to seal the deal. Top 40 country, better watch your back, 'cause this hot rod's faster than your Cadillac.